from GPB News. This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headley. Are you in the mood for a good, healthy debate? State lawmakers, I hope you are. They get back to work on Monday, and there is a lot for them to argue about. Casino gambling, medical marijuana. We'll have your guide to the issues today and tell you what to listen for as the legislature kicks off a new session next week. We'll also have some friendly debates later in the show during the break room. Our panel is here to talk about whether merit pay for teachers is a good idea and why one of the latest faces of designer women's wear is a teenage boy.
So Jaden Smith, the 17-year-old son of Will and Jada. Now, in the campaign, you're going to see him posing alongside three female models.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to be rocking a skirt with a fishnet vest with tassels.
Yeah.
And is this fashion forward or fashion fail?
It's coming up this hour. First, though, something that is always up for debate, the Georgia playlist. We'll add two more quintessentially Georgia songs to the series today, two of my favorite songs. And we always want your input on the playlist. What song or artist do you think best represents the Georgia sound? We got a tweet that says, when does Dreams So Real, a band from the 80s and 90s, I think, make the playlist? Inquiring Minds and all that. That's from OSG Nelson, which I think is our own John Nelson. Help us grow the Georgia playlist with your own picks. You can call us at 404-500-9457. Send a tweet at OST Talk or leave a message on Facebook, and we might feature your comment on the show. As I mentioned, the Georgia legislature reconvenes Monday, and there are a whole bunch of important issues on the docket. With us now to sort of break down the new session is Christina Torres. She's a political reporter for the AJC and joins us yet again. Welcome back.
Hi. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you as well. Monday starts a busy season,
as always.
Since we have a sort of truncated session, it makes... It intensifies it, I imagine, the work that happens at the Capitol.
There's a rumor going around that they're going to try and finish, and mind you, it's a rumor that they're going to try and finish by March 17th or so, which means a very truncated session, which means a lot of wheeling and dealing in a very short period of time. So it's going to be something to watch out for.
Okay, so let's start with one of the ones, which is almost a leftover controversy, because we were talking about the Religious Liberty Bill for quite some time. Christina, I'm a little surprised to see it back, because from what I understood, there was already so much pushback and negativity surrounding this bill. That's sort of why it didn't really get a healthy debate last time.
Well, I might argue it did get a healthy debate, and then we're ongoing into sort of year three, really.
Yeah.
And so, you know, here we have the second year of a two-year session. The bill is still alive. It's Senate Bill 129. It's stuck in the House, and there's a fight over anti-discrimination language to be added or not to be added to the bill. You talk to Senator McCoon, he feels it's absolutely something that's necessary. More than 20 states have adopted some kind of language like this.
Yeah, let me actually play a clip from State Senator Josh McCoon. He is the sponsor of this bill, and he spoke about why it's needed. This is actually from last January.
There is nothing about protecting someone's right of free exercise that denigrates another human being, that costs another human being anything. But the cost of failing to protect the fundamental bedrock freedoms upon which any free society is founded has a tremendous cost.
Here's the thing, Christina. A huge number of businesses have come forward against this bill.
Exactly. I mean, you've got some of the big ones, Delta, Home Depot, Coca-Cola. You've got Google coming out, AT&T. They launched an effort this week, and they call it Georgia Prospers. It's an idea that they're signing a pledge to say they won't discriminate against anyone. And I think it's aimed really at the gay community, but anyone because of race, ethnicity,
gender,
sexual orientation, gender identity. So, they aren't willing to say, yes, this is an effort to defeat religious liberty, but they are saying they are worried.
Okay, let's move on to another one that's going to get a lot of press, and that's whether or not we bring casinos in.
As we say, ka-ching.
That's right. Tell me what's up for debate here.
Well, you know, the effort is to essentially allow legalized gambling in Georgia. I mean, certainly states around the state like Florida, Louisiana, you can go gamble in North Carolina. So it's really an argument of whether Georgia's come as far as in terms of the conservative nature of the state to allow that.
But still limited. Nobody's talking about just opening up the floodgates.
It wouldn't be unlimited. It would be roughly about up to six casinos around the state, maybe two around Metro Atlanta, including one big one probably downtown Atlanta. I don't know that that's going to pass this year. I think there's a lot of groundwork that needs to be done before they're willing to do it.
And one of the reasons they say to do it is because they put that money towards schools. But this is John Kent. He's a professor at the University of Illinois. He was interviewed by WSB-TV. He is skeptical.
Instead of helping students and teachers and public employees, those monies that they should be getting are going to be siphoned away into the gambling interest pockets.
So your expectation is we will not see a decision on casinos this session?
That is my expectation. I mean, you never know. You never know what's going to happen. I mean, the whole issue here really is the Hope Scholarship. It's so popular. It's done so well over the last couple decades that they need more money for it. And this is one proposal of a way to get more money for it. And I should add, it's not just casinos. There are horse racing advocates who want to legalize gambling and betting on horse races in Georgia. And they're making their push, too. And that's really all part of it. If you can raise more than $200 million for Hope, in addition to what the lottery already does, you know, some people think that's a good idea.
Okay, let's move on to another controversial. It seems like a lot of the ones they're addressing this time around are very controversial.
It's an election year. I should add that.
Yes. So let's talk about marijuana. Mm-hmm. We already have an extremely limited approval for legalization of marijuana. Cannabis oil only.
Right, and a very limited amount of cannabis oil. It's not.
And you can't grow it here, which has caused a problem.
It's caused a big problem. And you know, there are families here that their children need this type of medicine, and they view it as medicine. It's not FDA approved, I should add. But, you know, there are still some folks who still live in Colorado where they can get a wider variety of this type of oil to treat their children who may have severe seizures or something like that. There's a push by Alan Peak. He's in the House. He passed HB1, which was the original medical marijuana bill. Just this week, he filed HB 722, I believe, that would expand and allow cultivation of medical marijuana in Georgia and expand, you know, the list of folks who would qualify. But it's almost a long shot. Governor Deal has said he's a little hinky about allowing cultivation in Georgia. Law enforcement officials are a little hinky, well, very hinky about allowing cultivation in Georgia. There may be some groundwork there that needs to be done, too. So I don't know that it's a short thing. I will say House Speaker David Ralston yesterday, and he told us this a couple weeks ago, he supports it. It's a way to make sure these families can get what they need without having to leave the state.
Because you can't cross state lines.
Yeah.
It's still
illegal.
In your car.
In the federal law, it's still illegal to cross state lines.
Which is, if you can't grow it here and you can't cross state lines with it, I don't know how you get it in.
But you talk to the families, and no one's going to tell you exactly what they do, but you're talking about getting on an airplane with something hidden maybe in a piece of luggage, or you're driving and hoping you don't get stopped.
Yeah, you're forcing them to break the law. Ralston is not the only one that supports this. Public opinion is pretty strongly in favor of this in Georgia, right?
It is. And I should add, you know, just a little marketing here. We'll have a poll come out that we'll write about on Sunday in AJC.com, myajc.com. It'll be in the print section. But talking about, you know, medical marijuana especially, I think public opinion is in favor of that. I think it gets a little, it lessens when you get to the idea of recreational. But I should add, no one is talking about recreational use in Georgia. This is strictly medical marijuana and specifically focusing especially on the cannabis oil.
Okay, let's move on to education, because as I understand it, you know, this is Governor Deal's last term in office and he's expected to leave politics entirely. And it looks like he's making education his main issue of his last days in last days of Governor Deal. So tell me what it is that he plans to do with education.
Well, he still has a couple years, so it gives him a little time. So they had the Education Reform Commission do a bunch of work because they're looking once again at maybe redoing the formula for how schools get funded, kind of how to make education better, how you pay teachers, all those kinds of things. The commission has wrapped up its work by the end of last year. They have passed those recommendations on to the governor, but I don't know that it's quite clear what he wants to do with that yet.
Do we get all of them? Did he release all of those recommendations so we can read through them?
The recommendations are released. They're online. I believe you can get through them through the governor's office. The big one is merit pay for teachers. It's going to be controversial, but that's one Deal has embraced. I should add, we're speaking about House Speaker David Ralston. He has disagreed with the governor on that because he's worried about metrics. How do you measure whether there has been enough done by a teacher to
that's
give them merit
pay? That's
serious,
because we just had this huge scandal in APS where teachers said the pressure to get high test scores is part of what led to that. And you could say that how you measure to lead to merit pay might create the same kind of environment.
And that's true. I think it's also true that there are certain aspects of how do you measure a music teacher, for example. They do great work, but how do you measure whether they've had a noticeable effect on a student? There are certain things I think you have to work out when you talk about metrics. And I think that's part of what the speaker is talking about. You know, merit pay has been around for a while. The idea of it is popular. You want to reward teachers who do well and who improve students. It's just, how do you do that in a way that's fair and equitable?
We're speaking with Christina Torres of the AJC about the upcoming legislative session. And my question is, where does the state legislature enter on this? How much of Governor Deal's education plan, such as giving more autonomy to local governments and control over their schools, having the state take over certain schools that are failing, how much of that can the governor do on his own? And at what point does the legislature have to come in and agree?
Well, remember, this coming year, we have a constitutional amendment that will be proposed looking at some of these issues, the opportunity school district issue, which passed last session, which now goes to voters this year. You know, that's part of the school takeover idea of helping failing school districts. The governor put a lot into that. It passed. That's why it's now on the ballot. You know, whether lawmakers want to take on additional controversy, because teachers still have a lot of pull at the Capitol in terms of whether they're happy or unhappy and who they're going to, you know, and I mentioned it was an election year, and it's election year for every lawmaker. I don't know if they may be willing to take that on this year. It's an idea that may linger, and I don't know if the governor wants to really push. You know, we talked about merit pay, which I think he has pushed, but I don't know that he wants to go further than that. You know, I think maybe he's going to look at his budget. He's proposed got a roughly about a $23 billion plus budget. I think he's going to unveil in a little bit. I think he may do more in that than he does in other things.
So let's talk about that budget, $23 billion plus or so. Have we gotten an early look at it and where most of that money is going?
I think we're going to get a good look at it probably in a week or two when he unveils it and does his State of the State address.
Yeah.
You know, we're looking at some money into education, healthcare, construction projects, those types of things. You know, my colleagues, Greg Bluestein and Katie Leslie, have a story they broke yesterday about how there's also going to be probably a discussion about tax credits. You know, we want a Super Bowl, for example, and that also will be controversial. You know, he may put more energy into stuff like that than he will in other things, and I think that plays into that.
Sometimes in an election year, a governor can have a hard time drumming up support among his party as you're nodding your head already. You know what I'm talking about? Politicians start playing to the voters instead of their own head of party in the state, right?
But we're talking about, in terms of the budget especially, that's where you can get the carrot to go along with the stick, depending what you want to do. I mean, it may be that the governor plays a lot of defense this year because he still has a couple years left where he can work out what he wants to work out to cement his legacy.
What I'm really asking is, Christina, are we going to see drama? Are we going to see arguments?
Drama? What?
Nathan Deal storming down to the Capitol to say, vote for my bill.
What you can love about Nathan Deal is he doesn't storm. He's very calm. Some of his staff, however, may storm.
Dang it, I want storming.
You want storming?
Yeah.
If we wrap up by March 17th, you probably will get storming.
Look, storming is a job security for reporters. As AJC reporter Christina Torres, the next session of the Georgia legislature begins Monday. You can find a complete guide to all the issues facing the state legislature in the Sunday edition of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And there's more, of course, at gpb.org/news. Christina, always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me. Happy weekending.
This is On Second Thought. It's time to add a couple more tunes to our Georgia playlist. That's our regular series where we ask people to choose two songs they think best represent the Peach State. The rules are simple. Nominations have to be songs written or performed by a Georgian, and it can't be one of their own songs. Today's installment comes from Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Sean Mullins.
My first pick for the playlist is Midnight Train to Georgia by Gladys Knight and the Pips.
LA.
Too much for the man. He couldn't make it.
So he's leaving the life he's come to know.
Jim Weatherly had written the song a couple years before Gladys recorded it, and he had written it as I'm leaving on a midnight plane to Houston. And it was more of a country western take on it. But she and the Pips were in the studio looking at a new record and heard this song, loved it. And being from Georgia, she wanted to change it to Midnight Train to Georgia, giving it a bit of a more Al Green R&B feel and also tagging her hometown and home state. And I thought that was amazing.
Said he's going back. To a simpler place and time. Oh, yes, he is. Now be with him. Oh, let midnight train to Georgia.
The chorus of this song is so great because she just continues to lift it and take it to the next level each time through. By the end, it's almost like you're in church.
He kept dreaming, ooh, that someday he'd be a star.
That's one of my favorite parts of the song right there, when the Pips say superstar, but he didn't get far. It's great. Because it hits a little close to home. Well, because a lot of us, you know, we seek this thing. We're not really sure exactly what we're after, but sometimes once you find it, you discover it's not exactly what you want, you know. That sounds like what happens to the character in this song. Or maybe he just really couldn't cut the mustard. It's hard to know. I always thought I could cut the mustard. I just decided I didn't want to on a certain level. Like, it wasn't the way to live my life, you know.
Said he's going back to find, ooh, a simpler place and time. Oh, yeah.
Call and answer thing with the Pips, and I love their background vocals and how they go back and forth with the, you know, the train whistle and the whole thing, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful rendition of the song. And when I think of Georgia and Atlanta and music, I think of Gladys Knight. She's one of the best. Probably, I think she should be crowned the Queen of Soul of the South. My second pick is Kid Fears by Indigo Girls.
Secret staircase, running high, you had a hide in the place.
I've always loved this song. The first time I heard them do it live, I remember going, wow, what a haunting melody, and very emotional, and I, at the same time, I didn't know exactly what the song was about. Lyrically, it's kind of cryptic and wild, and I love that about it. Amy really writes that a lot, and I've always really admired that. It's very poetic, and sometimes she doesn't come right out and spell it out for you. You have to think about it a minute.
Skipping stones. We know the price now, and innocent will do.
I met Amy Ray when I was 15 years old, and she was probably 19 or 20. She was at Emory at her first year there, and I was on my way to dropping out of high school. I was having a tough time. I was in a punk rock band and also just really trying to find myself as an artist and a person. Amy came to my school and talked at a career education class. It was some kind of elective I was taking to get out of something else, I'm sure. And she was in there with a Husker Du t-shirt on, you know, and ripped up blue jeans and an old Gibson guitar. And I just thought she was the coolest thing. She could tell I was a kid in trouble, I think. And she ended up writing me this really long letter. I got it a couple of weeks later. It was several pages long. And really thoughtful and really caring, and just follow your dreams, and you can do whatever you want to do in this life, and stuff that I hadn't heard a lot of before. So she was really an early influence for sure. I think maybe what the Georgia sound is that it's not just one sound. You know, it's not as easy to define because of where it sits in the country, and all of us that are here, everyone kind of helps to develop the sound, and it changes over time. But I think it all gets put into this wonderful stew, and we all learn and grow from it, and hopefully that's what the Georgia sound really is.
That is singer-songwriter Sean Mullins with his picks for our ever-growing Essential Georgia Playlist. If you have a song that you want to add to the list, or nominate at least, it's very easy. Tweet us at OST Talk or call and tell us, and maybe sing a little at 404-500-9457. Be brave. Sing for us. We welcome it. You can find all of our Georgia Playlist picks at gpb.org/onsecondthought. It has been another long week. We've covered everything from the comedy scene in Atlanta to local active shooter response training, and then the return of the American chestnut tree. So, as we do every Friday, we've gathered a group of smart people to help us kick back, unwind, and think about what the heck happened this week. It's time for the break room.
Back home, I'm fighting another battle for safe, regulated, and legal in-state cultivation of medical cannabis.
Class, anyone? Anyone? Anyone seen this before?
Was he inebriated? Was he with anybody?
He was with a crew.
Joining us in the break room, Kalina Bowler. She's the co-host of the Real Snobs podcast. Lucky Yates is part of the Atlanta Improv Theater Dad's Garage and the voice of Krieger on the FX animated show Archer. Tamika DePriest is a marketing and communication strategist. And Stefan Turkheimer is a lawyer and editor for the website Peach Pundit. Welcome. Welcome Yay. To Friday.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Very excited.
First break room of the year.
Yeah, how about that?
The best one so far.
Yeah. We're setting the bar
so
low.
High.
Yeah.
Oh, dang.
Oh, well. I mean,
I'll just speak for yourself, sir. This is my A game.
I haven't even given you guys a topic to discuss. We're already going. But let's start with something we can all relate to.
Allow me to introduce myself. I represent the Rent is Too Damn High party.
All right, anyone remember that guy's name?
Oh, my God, I love that guy.
Oh, Colonel? No.
Jimmy McMillan with the gloves. Colonel, that's an interesting title for him.
It's honorary.
We've talked about rent prices in Georgia. Typically, people think of rent being relatively low here, especially if you've lived in New York or D.C. But there's a report out from the website apartmentlist.com. It says Georgia's rent prices are actually growing faster than they are elsewhere in the nation. They listed the 10 most expensive cities where you can rent a two-bedroom place in Georgia. North Atlanta's number one. Dunwoody is number two. You can actually catch the full list at our Facebook page. But what do you think about the cost of living here? Anyone noticed rent going higher?
I didn't really realize so many people were flocking to Dunwoody these
days.
Right? That's what I'm thinking. Like,
wow.
Who's living over there?
You
got
ready
a
for the
station.
Complaints from Dunwoody there?
Bring them on. I'm just saying, I didn't know. Maybe I'm missing out on the
whole
Dunwoody
thing. Have you
been to Dunwoody?
No, I don't even draw.
You know what? I don't even know where Dunwoody is.
Oh, come on.
North?
That's complaints to Lucky Yates at complaints.com.
You can tweet at me directly.
I will say, I have noticed in the Beltline communities how the rent has just really started to shoot up, especially Old Fourth Ward, where, you know,
taking advantage of being close to the Beltline.
Correct, right. And I think that the more people that flock to North Atlanta that are, you know, millennial age, like young Gen Xers, and they're coming here and they're wanting to have that city feel, but they still want that kind of weird, nature thing that we have here in Georgia. They want
trees.
Like all the seasons.
Trees.
They want trees.
I'm
trees
wishing we were on TV
for.
So they could see
the hands
movements you're doing. When
it's all
about nature.
Right. It's all jazz hands when I think about this. So it's very interesting. And I'm wondering though if the rent raising is in tandem with the raise in salary. I don't know exactly what jobs most of these people are taking when they come here. But I
can tell you that the wages are not increasing for the majority of people.
Right, and that's concerning to me.
Yeah. I think it's people living
Go ahead. Sorry, Tamika.
Well, I was going to say that what's interesting is these rental rates, because I've actually done a scan not long ago, maybe about 6 months ago, and in the areas in the Beltline as well. And I was really surprised by rent being in the $1,400-$1,500 a month range for very small, what I consider small units.
Right.
And these prices reminded me more of mortgages than rental rates for apartments and townhomes.
Oh, that's interesting. The mortgages actually would be cheaper than the rent I'm paying.
I live on 13th Street between Juniper and Piedmont, and I live in an old, old building, and we're the last holdout of sort of the ancient Midtown. But right next door to us, immediately next door to us, they're building a 250-unit luxury apartments, and they start rent starts at like $1,500 or $1,700.
Yeah, that's more than a
mortgage. And the apartments are tiny, and they have what they're calling resort style pools, but they are the renderings of these pools are, I swear to God, they're like 4 foot by 4 foot, and you can only sit down in them, but they're connected by these little bridges, which makes them resort style.
I don't know.
And not only is there that building in Midtown, but in our immediate area, there's five buildings set to open up between next summer and the end of 2016. Where are all of these high-dollar people coming from?
What jobs are they taking?
Yeah, exactly. Who's paying them to live in these really expensive apartments?
I mean, and Google's not hiring that many people here.
No.
You know what I mean?
No, there aren't that many law firms in Midtown. Am I right?
No, not nearly enough.
Okay, so let's move on to someone who probably can afford to buy the whole building at the age of 17, Jaden Smith. He is the son of Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith. He's had a few acting roles alongside his father in the wildly successful 2013's After Earth.
I hear something.
I'm tracking a life form moving toward you. 50 meters. 20. 10. It has found you.
Okay, it was not wildly
successful. I was just going to say, I think you're being very generous when you say wildly successful.
I'm actually even successful. Kidding. Yeah. he is now a model for the spring-summer 2016 Louis Vuitton women's wear ad campaign. He's worn skirts before. He wore one to prom, so I guess this isn't a complete surprise. There's been a huge amount of positive reaction among people in the press. One writer in Jezebel described him as, quote, our avant-garde lord and savior. But there's been a pushback from women saying, look, we're trying to get more realistic models of women's bodies, and a teenage boy is probably not that. What do we think of this?
I think his body, as it is now, looks like a teenage girl's body, a petite teenage girl's body. I just don't think...
I think preteen, maybe.
Maybe, right. I mean, he's a small guy.
It's getting uncomfortable quickly.
But listen, I am a woman. I don't have a problem with this at all. I think it's great. If there's androgynous models all over the place, and there are women that are wearing stuff from men's lines and things like that. So I just don't see the problem here.
Well, yeah, I'm a man, and I also don't see a problem because I'm hoping this is finally going to usher in the business kilt.
I am totally down.
Do you know how hot it is in this city in the summer? Plus the global warming, which
Celeste
is a myth.
Celeste, so
you
nice
know what
being
I mean.
Here. I'm going to check out now. Thanks.
Look, here's the deal. Offices can be hot. Courts can be hot. I was once in a court in Albany, Georgia in the summer that was 105 degrees, and I had to argue to a jury. If I had been wearing a skirt, things would have gone much better for me.
Touche.
Yeah.
Touche.
I would do it in a heartbeat. I would wear skirts in a heartbeat.
There you go.
Well, the next time you guys are here, I'm going to be expecting to see those kilts.
But it's not socially acceptable.
Jaden,
and I'm not Scottish. Yeah, do it, Jade. And you know what? Here's the thing. The fact that he legitimately does it, right? He's like worn skirts to prom and stuff like that. And it's not an attention grab where it's just like, look at me. I'm just going to become a lady model for a minute.
It can be both, can't it?
Well, it's Jaden Pinkett. It's Jaden Smith. So, of course, there's, you know, he's also kind of bananas.
Right.
Kanye did it. Did it first and before Jaden and got some buzz around it as well. I think it's a good thing. I mean, there are several movements happening to challenge traditional modeling. Yeah. So, you know, why not? Why not?
I mean, I got
you
no problem
with it.
I just think that women should start modeling men's clothes from now on.
Oh, absolutely.
I think it should be, you know.
Let's do it.
Let's
men's
make it even.
Men's clothes are not comfortable.
No, I know, but.
On women.
Yeah. They're not comfortable on men either, but come on.
We are having coffee and conversation in the break room as we do every Friday. My guests today are Kalina Bowler, co-host of the Real Snobs podcast, Lucky Yates, the voice of Krieger on the FX animated show Archer, Tamika DePriest, a marketing and communications strategist, and Stefan Turkheimer, a lawyer and editor for the website Peach Pundit. And we want to say thank you to Savannah Coffee Roasters for donating the coffee that is fueling our break room guests this morning, good and strong. They're online at savannahcoffee.com. Okay, a public service announcement was released this week by Macon State Representative Alan Peek, also the Atlanta-based group Veterans for Cannabis. The PSA advocates for medical marijuana to be cultivated, grown here in Georgia. So let's hear a bit of that PSA. It's narrated by Air Force vet Josh Luttrell. He is the CEO of Veterans for Cannabis.
I'm fighting for veterans, but also cancer patients, children, and adults suffering from seizures, Georgians with unbearable chronic pain, and many others who can't find relief with pharmaceutical medications. For us, medical cannabis works.
Okay, so Representative Peek is introducing a bill this year on licensing in-state manufacturers of medical cannabis. Here's the problem. You can use cannabis oil in a very limited way in Georgia now, as of last year, but you can't grow it here, and it's illegal to carry it across state lines.
Right.
So,
go ahead.
I was just going to ask, what do we think here? Do we think that it's going to start loosening? Is the legislature ready to start loosening the...
Listen, Georgia, get with the program. I don't know how many of you legislators are out there listening right now, but it's time to catch up because you know what? Every other state is about to legalize it everywhere, and you're missing. We've got a lot of good farmland here in this state. Mm-hmm. And, buddy, if we don't start helping our farmers out and getting that industry rocking here, and we could be the first ones along the I-75 corridor up to Michigan. Oh, man, it would be great.
Oh, my gosh. I'm actually going to go... right off of what you said, I've heard a story recently about peach growers being concerned how warm the winter was, and they were concerned about their crop coming and whether or not it will. And I said, well, wouldn't it be amazing if these growers of certain fruits in the state, if they have like an off season, if they could supplement somehow...
Right.
By growing the
if
medical
only
marijuana.
There were some plant that withstood high temperatures and humidity.
There you go.
Or at the very least, they'd be a lot less stressed about the peach crop. Right?
True. Yeah, you wouldn't care so much.
I want to be clear that we're talking about medical marijuana
here. Right.
Well,
this is recognition.
I mean,
anxiety is a medical condition, Celeste, and it should be added to the list.
Hello.
I do not try to hide at all that I'm a huge stoner.
Good job, Jay.
And I
thanks
was,
for waking up this morning, boys.
Yeah, you're welcome. I was on Paxil and Wellbutrin and have knocked it completely out. I was, on pharmaceuticals to try to get my anxiety under control, and
you
I don't have
chill.
To take those anymore because there is pot, and it keeps me nice and happy.
But
and
not enough,
regular.
Right? So,
if
I want to be clear that GPB is not advocating the use.
No, Lucky Yates is. No. Lucky Yates will advocate the use of marijuana for what ails you.
Tamika, can we bring you in here?
Yes. You know, guys, I'm with you on this. How can we help the farmers plot? But, you know, Georgia is just traditionally slow to adopt.
You're talking about legislation. I want to be...
Yes. I'm talking about legislation. When I think about, when I even think about alcohol here, now we're not using that medically here. I mean, some are not. But just when I think about our legislature and progressive... opportunities, things tend to move slow. So I'm hopeful, but I think of it as a slow process.
I think that's sometimes true, but it's not always true. Like, for instance, Georgia was the first constitution in the entire world to have a right to privacy enshrined in it. I mean, there's certain ways in which Georgia is incredibly progressive and has been historically. And I think, Peek, being a Republican, has a chance to get this moved. Now, is it going to move this year? Probably not, because Deal's against it. But this is a real... a real movement, and this is a real movement in Georgia. I mean, did you think like a year ago or 5 years ago that we'd have any kind of medical marijuana? And we do. So right. The question is, how quickly can it move?
Well, then let's talk about something else that's being proposed. Back in 2013, five firefighters in Gwinnett County were lured into a house and taken hostage there by gunpoint. A SWAT team did rescue them. But the following year, Carrollton State Representative Kevin Cook proposed arming firefighters while they're on duty. Under his proposal, it would be optional for the firefighter to carry a firearm, and then their superiors would have to sign off on it. But here's Fire Chief Wade Simmons from Pooler, Georgia. He has concerns about this proposal, and here he's talking to WSAV in Savannah.
What do we do in a fire situation? We don't want to take a loaded gun in the high heat environments that we have on our hips. So now we have to take it off. Now we have to secure it in a vehicle. All right, so now I have to modify the vehicle to have gun safes for three or four personnel. So now I have to have a big gun safe because you have to get three or four weapons in there.
Okay, it is not clear yet if this is going to be reintroduced this session, but what do you all think? Could we have safer world with armed firefighters?
No. What? Why? What? What?
I'm going to go ahead and bet that I'm the only person here who's tried to put out a fire with a gun. And it takes forever.
Did you try patting it?
It's
or
very loud.
It?
No, you shoot at it. You don't. Yeah. No, come
Get
on.
Get back,
now.
Fire.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's dangerous, right? Yeah. So you shoot things that are dangerous. Like, it takes forever.
Wait, if it's a grease fire, I think you're supposed to use flour.
Flour
How
bullets.
How do you shoot flowers?
Yeah. In all seriousness.
Yes.
Oh, I was. Okay.
I know, I'm messing. But I'm really going against the things that I believe when I say that I feel that these first responders should have some sort of firearm protection. Some of these people go into extremely dangerous situations. They're first ones to arrive. And this is not the only time, the only incidents where they come into a situation and the guys just called them just to take people hostage because he's on some kind of weird, you know, vendetta.
That's a good point, but they're not unarmed. They have axes.
Yeah. They've got all kinds
true.
Of
yeah.
This is true.
Intense
but.
Equipment going on. And also, I mean, yes, but cops are usually on the scene too when there's a fire, are they not?
Often they get called at the same time. And I should mention that firefighters don't routinely get weapons training. This
or,
is true.
Or
and we've got enough issues right now with police and use of firearms. So
true
I'm
that.
On the end of no for firefighters. Just focus on putting the fire out.
Yeah.
Yeah. The fact that the fire chief didn't want it to happen is a pretty good indication that it's a lousy idea.
And just to point out, though, I mean, they're called firearms. Okay. So me trying to use one to put out a fire is not that odd. Thank you.
Have you ever tried to use one to grow actual firearms? Arms of fire.
Okay.
Oh, God. Not yet.
All right, let's talk about teachers and how they're paid.
This is the best break
room
ever.
This is so much fun. So much
I feel
fun.
Like all I'm doing is just trying to keep everything from going off the rails. Let's talk about teachers. So many of us have had teachers that have really inspired us. Maybe teachers that just scared the bejesus out of you.
You're not going to have your mommy slam behind you anymore and wipe your little douches. No more complaining. No more Mr. Kimble left to go to the bathroom. Nothing. There is no bathroom.
That is Arnold Schwarzenegger, of course,
oh,
from
Kindergarten Cop.
That was a funny movie.
That's fiction.
Who is your daddy and what does he do?
It's not a tumor.
The fact is, Georgia Governor Nathan Deal is now pushing a proposal that's similar to a merit pay system for teachers in which their salaries would be based on performance. Let me go to you first, Tamika, because you're, I think, the one that's worked in the educational system. What do you think about this? What are the pros and cons here?
So I'm on the fence about merit-based pay strictly. I think there are a lot of issues that could center around that, you know, from the evaluation tool to the process, et cetera. I am for a salary-based structure that includes merit bonus for teachers of high-achieving classes. And that, I think, is a better approach than strictly merit-based compensation, strictly.
Okay. You know, I mean, let's get everyone else's input here, because some people say that it was the emphasis on, I mentioned this to our AJC reporter this morning, was that it was the emphasis on student performance that helped feed into the AJC, the APS scandal over cheating on tests. So what do we think about merit-based pay?
Okay. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You
there,
go ahead.
There are so many factors that go into whether or not a child learns in school. you know, their family life, their environment that they come from, whether or not a teacher is able to actually connect enough with the child to teach them a lesson. I think that if we're going to just go to a merit-based pay system for these teachers, we're just basically saying you guys are on the same level as the people that work at Best Buy on commission. Like, how much can you sell? And, you know, that's
what's
going to be.
But there are teachers. I mean, the vast majority of the teachers I had were fantastic, but there are teachers who aren't maybe performing up to speed, right?
Well, and they should be evaluated as such and removed ultimately, just like standard procedure in workplace environment.
Thank you. They should just be fired. They shouldn't just, you know, get a little bit of money
there. We should have some sort of metric for determining how well teachers do. I mean, in that way we can improve and do all those things. The problem is, once you try and establish that metric, it is extremely hard.
Yeah.
Because no matter how good the teacher is and how great that person is performing, it's certainly possible she just randomly gets a bunch of dumb kids. And so you're not going to pay her that.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And
like,
so it's like,
a teacher that's teaching a bunch of upper income kids is already going to have
They're already good.
They can be dumb too, Celeste.
I didn't say they could.
There are dumb rich kids. There are a ton of them.
I mean, I am going to go way out there and say, why are we not trying to figure out how to raise all teachers' pay so that it's a career that, you know, is
it's viable.
Almost like, yeah, like doctors and lawyers, where you have to have so much education, you're held to a certain standard because you're making a lot of money. Plus, you're teaching the future generations of people that you want to do that correctly and not churn out.
Yeah.
I mean, teachers are like among the lowest paid careers going.
And they're so important.
I totally agree with you up to the point where we had to throw lawyers into this. You can make your point without insulting a lawyer.
Oh my God.
Who's insulting you by saying you are held to a certain standard because you make a good amount of money?
Don't remind people of this.
All right. We have time to talk about a couple more things. And so let's move to the West Coast in Oregon. It's been almost a week since a group of armed protesters took over a federal wildlife refuge in that state. This is a long-standing battle in the West over the use of federal land. These guys are not just holed up on this refuge with no contact with the outside world, though. They're holding press conferences. They're asking for snacks. Here's one of the leaders, Ammon Bundy.
This refuge here is rightfully owned by the people. And we intend to use it.
So yesterday, the local county sheriff offered them safe passage out of the state. They don't live there. If they end the standoff and just leave, the group refused to do that. But some people are saying, look, the National Guard was called in when there were protests, a nonviolent protest in Baltimore and Ferguson. Why isn't the National Guard on site in Oregon? What do we think?
I think that they want an armed conflict with the National Guard.
That's all they want.
Right.
Yeah, then they become martyrs, and then their cause becomes huge. And then
they're armed, and they're ready for it, and this is their whole
militia
goal.
Versus federal government civil war going on in this country.
I think
what
in Baltimore and Ferguson, you had protesters, and you had, there was some associated violence, but I don't think the goal was a conflict, an armed
this
conflict.
Is an armed takeover, not a protest.
Yeah, we're just going to give them what they want
if we
do that.
Well, it began with a peaceful protest, a march.
But they were all armed. They were all carrying rifles and guns, and they've holed themselves up on federal land with a lot of weapons,
a whole lot
saying
of weapons.
We're not budging unless...
Some of them have said they're prepared to die. Tamika, do you want to come in on this?
You know, I'm baffled by this whole thing. I'm used to a different kind of response when these things happen. And, you know, this is a militant group. In other instances, in my mind, they would have been called terrorists, except they're just holding themselves up. It's really a confusing and baffling situation to me. I really can't figure it out.
Since you mentioned confusing and baffling, let's move on to subject. Yeah, last subject of conversation.
I have so much more to say.
I know.
Why are they all white guys? Let's just talk about that for a second.
Let's
it's all white guys.
Let's go there.
It's
let's go there. Lucky,
like, let's go.
Go
there. Come on, man.
We have 3 minutes, Lucky. We can't go into the white guy
white
thing.
But they're all white and white. Oh.
Let's end this conversation.
Jerks, you're a bunch of hillbilly jerks.
Y'all kind of.
Oh, no. Let's end on a mystery here.
Where in the world is...
Johnny Manziel.
Johnny.
Oh, man.
That would be Jessica. No. Metzger did that. Johnny Manziel is the quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. He had suffered a concussion. He was not slotted to play last Saturday, the team's last game of the season, but he was supposed to meet with a team doctor that weekend. He had an appointment. Instead, reportedly, he was in Las Vegas on Saturday incognito. Here's an ESPN reporter describing how Manziel spent his night at Sin City.
I've been told by multiple people that he had the wig on. There was a fake mustache involved. He had a hoodie that he was wearing throughout the night, glasses as well. There were parts at the night, during the night at the club where it was later on, obviously, the fake mustache fell off. So it was complete chaos, evidently.
Well, here's where this becomes even funnier. He posted a picture of Instagram of him with his dog and saying that's where he was at home with his dog. But there's obviously no way to know when that picture was taken. So that's not actual evidence. Yes.
There was a fake mustache involved.
Is he done?
Like it was his sidekick.
But once it came off, it was chaos.
that's
a news story.
That's when it went nuts.
The mustache fell off and then people began. Oh.
I can't even deal right
now. And now you can bring your dogs to a club. That's
mustache
great.
Is dancing
listen,
on a
Listen, this guy is 100% idiota, okay? And that's not even a real word. I'm just saying.
I was going to ask you what language
no,
that was.
No, it's not. Latin. It's the language of the idiots is what, you know. Yeah.
It's the concussion. It's the concussion.
That's
you know
right.
What?
I'm
you know
with
what?
You. It's a head injury.
Do it.
Tamika, I was just going there because I'm really starting to wonder. Because first I said, okay, this guy is just an entitled, you know, D-bag.
Right.
Like, what is he doing? What's happening? What's going on? But then I started thinking... Because I also watched this documentary and getting ready for the concussion movie. There are a lot of football players that start to act out irrationally when they start having all this head trauma. And I'm just, and it might be a reach at this point, but as long as he's been playing football and as many times as he's, you know, sustained some head injuries, he might not really be
okay, you're being
right
generous.
Now.
We only have about a minute left, but is Manziel done?
Hold on a second here. How irrational is it to prefer Las Vegas over Cleveland? That seems totally rational to me.
I don't know that he's done. The coach sort of has given him an in a way. You know, he seemed more behind him rather than making a
they
statement.
They know something we don't know, y'all.
To rule him out. So I think it's the concussion. And that's that. I don't think he's done.
But I am done with him. I really am. I want him gone. I will say that. He just needs to go.
His lack of football skills might be a problem going forward.
What if it turns out that the fake mustache has been the football player all along? And that Johnny Manziel is merely
a
figurehead.
And
I'm just
mad he has all this money.
On that
and nobody
theory,
could get his mustache together for him. Like,
on that theory, we're going to end the break room today. Thanks to everyone, Colleen Avola, The Real Snobs Podcast, Lucky Yates of Dad's Garage, marketing and communication strategist Tamika DePriest, and Steven Turkheimer of The Peach Pundit. If you have done something outlandish in order to play hooky and go on vacation, I want to hear about it. You can call us at 404-500-9457 or tweet us. For today and the week, that is On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headley. Have a great weekend.